In defence of liberal democracy is a clarion call for today's divided time, a bold reaffirmation of the liberal democratic principles that have carried America through each crisis in its history and can do so again. It is a new book by Manuel Hines, who is El Salvador's former prime minister, Mexican winner of the Manhattan Institute's Hayek Prize, and he's worked with the World Bank in the private and public sectors. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, the author of In Defense of Liberal Democracy, Manuel Hines. Manuel, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you? It's a pleasure to be with you.
The pleasure is all ours indeed. Liberal democracy, healing a divided America. Surely, after the events, and we have just seen some of the people who stormed Capitol Hill receiving sentences today, surely America is going to take an awful lot of healing.
Yes, yes. I'm sure the, you know, all over the world, we are aware that in the United States, people are splitting almost half and half on each and every issue. They become very, very angry at each other, even with very a lot of issues that are worthless, really. So what you see is there is this tremendous a split in the society, which is absolutely new in the United States up to this moment.
The interesting thing is it's the rise of populism that we have seen and populist solutions to upheaval. People will say, well, you know, we have never been in a situation like this in America. But your book says that, yes, you have, because there's the Industrial Revolution, the Great Depression, and there have always been, throughout America's history, there have been times of crisis. There have been times of political instability.
Exactly. Yes. And actually, this is one of the important points in my book. That you see that these are like cycles that are recurring. The last time there was something like this in the United States was about 100 years ago during the second part of the Industrial Revolution and the Great Depression. You know, and I attribute these problems of this unity to the technological revolutions, really. You know, it's at that time, as it is today, this was not an exclusively American problem. It is a worldwide problem. What happens is that in the United States, it is most marked in this time. And I think that it was much more marked in Europe 100 years ago.
You also make the point, and you mentioned that of where we are in terms of technology now, and because of the rise of social media, everybody's got a phone, everybody's got a camera, everybody's got the ability to shed their thoughts and to share their thoughts with the world at the push of a button. That has, if you like, we have, as a, you can argue, as a race, as human beings, lost the idea that the world is not black and white. There are several shades of grey. So if I say, for example, that I like oranges, then somebody will come back at me and saying, are you saying that you hate apples? And in a political arena, if you either have to be 100% on one side or 100% on the other side, and that speaks, that serves a populist agenda.
Exactly. And also, there are, like, I would say, chains of ideas that if you prefer the oranges, that means that you prefer apartments to houses. And also, you prefer cities to something else. And you prefer the income tax to something like that. You know, people are becoming, are getting together let's say they become advocates of one simple idea, one single idea. And then, you know, they go and they ally themselves with some others who have another single idea. Like, let's say if you are pro-abortion, okay? But then there are people who come here and say, well, we are for more relaxed fiscal issues, fiscal policies, and then they become allies, and then people start thinking that there are two very big, let's say, alliances in the world, which are the progressives and the conservatives, or whatever you want to know. And if you are pro-abortion, you should be also for lax fiscal policies and so on. And then, because of that, you know, every single issue divides people. And in my book, what I think, what I say is that this happened 100 years ago. And this happens because the technological revolutions are absolutely disruptive. And people think, you know, that this is very nice to see the disruption of one section here and one policy, some policies and some institutions there. But when you take all of them together, really, you know, what happens is that they are destroying a lot of institutions. Because the technologies change the way people relate to each other. And institutions are mechanisms to relate people to each other. And then if you change completely the way you are relating to each other, then, you know, you have a problem, an institutional crisis. And this is what is happening now. And this is what happened 100 years ago.
But the thing is, because of the fact that we are not, even though we are all connected, okay, we are not all connecting. So I can have conversations with my friends anywhere in the world, yet my actual physical transactions with people are very, very limited. And when it comes to discussing issues of politics, of markets, of whatever, it is much easier to sit on a keyboard and insult somebody in another continent and say something that you would never say if you were sitting in front of them. And exactly. And we have lost the art of diplomacy.
Yes, exactly. And when you start going in this direction, you may lose morality as well, you know, because you immediately start you know, what is happening now in these social networks is that people ally against certain individuals, different every day, you know, because they start feeling that they belong to a big majority, a big moral majority, and then they feel that they are absolutely justified to destroy another human being, you know? And then we are coming back to this very old practices of the majority attacking a minority, but the minority changes every day, you know?
I mean, it's interesting you talk about a majority attacking a minority, and I don't want to go too far with this, but if you look at the way that people from, you know, migrants from El Salvador, from Guatemala, from Central America were treated, you know, as if they were, there was an invasion going on. And that, you know, suddenly, and even Mexico, they're all grouped together because they are different, and the demonization. And we had that to a certain extent, you know, this last year, and we've had that through the centuries as well. That must be a very worrying trend.
Yes, it is. And actually, I think it is terribly worrying in Europe and in the United States, you know, because of the importance of the areas. You know, when you get into in this direction, you start splitting society every day, you know, in different directions. And then you start, you lose completely the perception of the value of a real unity to maintain equilibrium in society. If every day, you know, you turn against somebody because he said something that someone else thought it was very bad to say, then you start playing musical chairs, you know, in a very nasty way, in which the music is playing and then suddenly, you know, the music stops. And somebody will be without a chair. Mm. And you don't know who this person is going to be. And then what is happening is that people start becoming terribly, terribly afraid of saying what they think about almost everything. And then you really split society, because people becoming afraid, they stop talking about the whatever is happening in society, of all the dimensions of society. And that is absolutely destructive, you know? That destroys the unity of society. And then it is very easy for people to manipulate these things. And then you have a populist leader, and then you can have even a Hitler or a Stalin, you know?
So when do you think, Manuel, when did you think that liberal democracy became a bad word? Because, you know, the book is In Defense of Liberal Democracy. Surely we don't have to be defending liberal democracy. It should be populists who are defending their attitudes. But we find liberal democracy as a bad word, as a, you know, to be a liberal now in certain places is to be seen as weak, as to be seen as being, as we say, in woke, or to be seen, you know, as embracing and just being to a different agenda. And so why did becoming a liberal be a bad thing, Megan?
Well, I think it's there are many things that are happening at the same time. I think that the trigger has been this destruction, this disruption of the institutions that comes with a technological revolution. You know, it's this happened 100 years ago, and some countries go on the wrong way. They become, in 100 years ago, some of them became communists, or some others became Nazis. But many others became liberal democracies. They were already, but they became even more liberal in their behavior. Now, the thing is that sometime in the last 20 or 30 years, the people in the United States, and I would say this started in the Anglo countries, you know, in the United States and in the UK, they started having these tremendous doubts about themselves, because many other groups came out accusing them, well, you had been colonialist, you have been, and they started criticizing all the things that happened during the time in which liberal democracy was there, triumphant. But the point is, people are mistaking, they are mistaking the point, you know, because they are saying that all these problems came because of liberal democracy. And all the destruction of institutions that are taking place now, they think that are coming, they are being destructing because the liberal democracy is obsolete. And actually, is the thing is, it doesn't have anything to do, you know. It's these technological changes would affect any society. Actually, I think that they started affecting the Soviet Union, because it was a very rigid society. But now, if we are going to have these tremendous changes our relationships, we need a flexible society, so that we can adjust to these new things that are happening. And the most flexible of all systems is liberal democracy, you know, because in liberal democracy, you take the adjustments day by day, because the decisions for this adjustment are taken by millions of people, because people are free. They can adjust in the way they want. But if you take the other direction, you know, if you are not going to be liberal, you are going to be illiberal, okay? Yeah. If you are illiberal, what you have is a tyrant. And the tyrant, beyond the horrendous problem that the tyrannies really destroy freedom, you know, the problem is that they are incredibly rigid. Look at the Soviet Union, You know, look at the Nazis. They go into some direction that is absolutely destructive because one person imposes his or her will on the rest of the population. And yet you destroy the diversity. And when you destroy diversity, you destroy creativity. And then you really kill the ability to adjust.
One of the points that you make in the book is the fact that we need tolerance. We don't need more polarization, and we need tolerance, and not just tolerance for the groups that, you know, may come to the front, but also a large section of the population, and they have been described before as, you know, the white, poor, male, feel left behind. And if we are to bring any nation together, then all segments need to be considered and brought back and included in this conversation.
Yes. Well, you know, it's there are two dimensions to this. One dimension is, I would say, absolutely objective, which is, you know, the Industrial Revolution multiplied the power of the muscle. This revolution is multiplying the power of the mind, okay? And the problems that we are getting are largely due to the lack of an adjustment, because the old society is dying, but the new institutions are not created as yet. So the problem is really that you have to adjust as fast as possible, because if some groups adjust very rapidly and they become very rich, and the other ones are left behind and they don't adjust, and then you have this growing problem in the distribution of income. So since we are now, this difference I made between multiplying the power of the muscle and multiplying the power of the mind, you will realize that what you have to do is educate people very fast so that the people can really take advantage of the new revolution. And you eliminate the left behind, because we all have to adjust to this. And in the old times, you know, when we discuss social policies, we will say, first we have to earn money, and then we are going to distribute it. But now, because the revolution is the knowledge economy, now if you don't educate your people, then you are not going to produce. So that this changed completely the ordering of things. We have to have these social policies educating people so that we will increase our production.
Are you optimistic for the future? I mean, did you write the book because you are optimistic for the future, or is it as a warning for the future?
Well, both, but actually I tend to be more optimistic, you know, because if you look at what happened 100 years ago, this discussion was exactly the same, and people said, you know, we need a Hitler, we need somebody who will adjust everything to this tremendous revolution, the Industrial Revolution. But then all these countries failed. You know, the ones that really triumphed were who? The United States, Britain, France, the countries that were liberal democracies. It was not really very clear when it started, you know, because when the Great Depression started, for example, Germany had Hitler in power, so that Hitler would solve this problem. But in England, they had a coalition government, and they including, you know, the left and the right and all kinds of politicians managing this, which seemed to be very, very complicated. But actually, the problem was very complicated, and you needed, you know, this coalition of people who put a lot of importance in the unity of the country. You have to unify. And they triumphed. And this can be repeated, I think. What we have to do is to become conscious that we have to put a price on unity, and then get all people working.
The book is called In Defense of Liberal Democracy, What We Need to Do to Heal a Divided America, and it's applicable to all countries. It's by Manuel Hines, who we've been speaking to today. Manuel, if people want to find out some more information about the book or about yourself, is there a website? Is there social media? Where can they find you? I know we're talking about social media, but where can they follow you?
You can find me. I don't have a website. You can find the book in Amazon. And if you write Manuel Hines, you will see a lot of articles I write every week.
The book is called In Defense of Liberal Democracy. It will also be available to download on our virtual bookstore. It is by Manuel Hines. Manuel, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, it has been really a pleasure.